This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
According to informed sources, Tehran is still studying the U.S. response to its amendments made to the EU proposal for the revival of the JCPOA. Two U.S. warships sailed through the Taiwan Strait amid tensions with Beijing over the recent visits by American delegations to Taiwan. Plus, the death toll from monsoon floods in Pakistan rising to more than 1,000. The country is appealing for international assistance to cope with the disaster. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Behruz Najafieh. Good to have you with us. A detailed examination of the U.S. response to Iran's amendments to a European Union draft proposal for reviving the 2015 deal is going on in Tehran at an expert level. According to Iran's newer news affiliated with the Supreme National Security Council, the process is expected to last until Friday. Washington gave its response earlier this week. Tehran says it will convey its final thoughts through the EU coordinator after a thorough examination. The deal was thrown into chaos when the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions. Since last year, Iran, the remaining signatories, have held multiple rounds of talks to revive the accord with Washington involved indirectly. Tehran has been demanding a strong and durable deal that would include sanctions relief and economic guarantees. Iran has unveiled its latest precision-strike unmanned aerial vehicle manufactured by the armed forces. The drone, named Ababil, has been outfitted with an optical seeker and a warhead capable of detecting targets. It's also able to capture and relay live images of the targets and destroy them with precision. Iran has made great accomplishments in the field of UAVs over the past years. In August, the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps said that Iran has become an exporter of military drones. Last year, General Kenneth McKenzie, head of the U.S. Central Command, also said Iran's widespread use of drones means that the U.S. is operating without complete air superiority for the first time since the Korean War. Syria is calling on the U.N. and the Security Council to issue a clear and explicit condemnation of the Israeli aggressions on its territory. In a letter addressing the U.N. chief and the head of the Security Council, the Syrian foreign minister recalled some of the recent Israeli crimes, including an attack on the Damascus International Airport last June. It said that the attack caused the airport to go completely out of service for 2 weeks. The minister noted that the regime is determined today more than ever to destroy Syrian infrastructure and endanger the lives of civilians. It says Israeli aggressions are a direct threat to regional and international peace and security, adding that Damascus reserves the right to respond to the attacks. Israel frequently performs missile attacks on Syria. The latest one came last Thursday when Israeli jets targeted a research facility in the city of Masyaf. Director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Tim Anderson, explains why Israel keeps targeting Syrian territory with air raids.
I think its main aim is to coordinate with the attacks of the U.S. occupation and the proxy armies, the terrorist groups in other parts of Syria, to try and destabilize Damascus and prevent a resurgent Syria with its support from other powers in the region, particularly Iran, because of course it fears that a strong Syria is going to reclaim the Golan eventually. Mm-hmm. And then of course the next step will be to dismantle the apartheid system in occupied Palestine. But I think the fact that the Israelis and also the US, you notice recently when they attacked some bases in eastern Syria, they claimed they were Iranian linked. The point of that is, I think that there's an extreme anxiety that when the time comes for Syria to retake the occupied Golan, it's certain that Iran is going to be its key ally there. The resistance in Lebanon also, it's not clear exactly what role Russia will play, but it's very clear to the Israelis that Iran is going to play an important part in the liberation of occupied Syrian territory and the liberation of Palestine.
Israeli settlers once again stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied East Al-Quds. That's a move that's seen as provocative by Palestinians. The incursion was carried out hours ago under the protection of the Israeli military. The settlers performed religious rituals in the courtyards of the holy site. For years, Israeli officials have been allowing settler incursions into the compound. Palestinians regard the practice as part of Israeli plans for the Judaization of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Non-Muslim prayers are prohibited at the site under an agreement between Israel and Jordan that's the custodian of the holy site. Last year, Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers led to an 11-day war with resistance groups in Gaza. Some 260 Palestinians were killed in that conflict. Meantime, Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip have attended the Friday sermon and prayers in front of the Red Cross office in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners. Last Monday, Palestinian prisoners started protesting their inhumane detention condition. A correspondent has more from the besieged Gaza Strip.
Hundreds of people attended the Friday prayer in front of the Red Cross office in the Gaza Strip in a move to express their sympathy and unity with Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails and detention centers. They came to drum up support for Palestinian prisoners who kicked off a series of protests last Monday against persistent mistreatment inside regime jails. The event is part of the Friday of Rage in solidarity with Palestinian detainees. During the Friday sermon, Hamas movement warned the Israeli regime against harming Palestinian prisoners.
Our military wings, including the Qassam and Quds brigades, and the military wings of all Palestinian resistance factions, are all united behind the prisoners. We will spare no effort to secure the release of the prisoners. Harming Palestinian prisoners is an attack on all Palestinian resistance factions.
Over the past 4 days, Palestinian detainees held in 24 Israeli prisons have refused to take part in security checks and returned their meals. They also organized sit-ins in prison yards as part of their protest action.
The Israeli prison service reneged on understandings that were previously reached with prisoners' representatives. It imposed punitive measures, including moving tens of detainees to solitary confinement, preventing inmates from going to the prison yard, and banning prisoners from meeting their families. In response to this, the Palestinian prisoners have declared the state of general mobilization last Monday.
In recent weeks, the Israeli prison service increased its oppressive measures against Palestinian prisoners by imposing double isolation on some detainees. Observers say the Palestinian prisoners have become propaganda material for candidates in Israel's elections.
Palestinian prisoners are escalating their actions because they demand better detention conditions. The suffering of Palestinian prisoners increases every time the Israeli regime plans to hold elections. Israeli officials are using the oppression of prisoners as part of their election campaigns.
Currently, there are some 5,000 Palestinian detainees in Israeli prisons, and that figure includes women and children. According to prisoners' advocacy groups, the Israeli regime has detained more than 1 million Palestinians since the Nakba in 1948, under the watchful eye of the international community. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Well, two U.S. warships are sailing through the Taiwan Strait in a move that's likely to raise tensions in the region even further. Three unnamed U.S. officials have confirmed to media that Navy cruisers Chancellorsville and Annadem are currently in the region. Similar operations have drawn Beijing's anger in the past, and that's the first one since tensions escalated early this month over House Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. Several other American delegations have since visited the island. China reacted by launching unprecedented military drills. Taiwan also conducted its own drills. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory and is strongly critical of the U.S. diplomatic exchanges as well as arms sales to the island. It says Washington is stirring separatist sentiments in Taiwan. Now, Pakistan has been grappling with monsoon flooding that has swept much of the country. The death toll has surpassed the 1,000 mark since mid-June. The government says that 119 people have died in one day. It's declared an emergency and mobilized the military. Thousands of residents in critical areas have been ordered to evacuate their homes. Pakistan has called for international assistance to cope with the aftermath of the natural disaster. This year's monsoon flooding has affected more than 33 million people. Nearly 1 million homes have been destroyed or badly damaged. Correspondent Nasser Kazmi says that the extent of the flood in Pakistan is so large that the government is unable to cope with the disaster properly.
The scale of disaster is so high, that's why the government is confused on how to deal with such a situation. The infrastructures have been destroyed in the fresh wave of the floods in the past 24 hours. And the National Disaster Management Authority of Pakistan is warning of more floods in next 48 hours. And the rains are continued in the areas where these floods are taking place. And as far as the government efforts are concerned, government is trying its best to reach out those people who are stranded in the floodings in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, in Balochistan province, as well as in Sindh province. But reaching on those places, reaching on those sites is very difficult for the government officials and the rescue workers. There were pledges from different neighboring countries, including Iranian President Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi called Pakistani Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif last night. Both leaders discussed the overall situation after the flooding in Pakistan. Iranian President assured all of his country's support to help Pakistan in such circumstances.
Well, like our correspondent just mentioned, the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has offered condolences and expressed sympathy with the Pakistani government and people. In a phone call with Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, Raisi said Iran is prepared to provide its neighbor with any kind of assistance. The president said that he has tasked relevant bodies with supplying first aid to the flood-stricken people as soon as possible. He added that Iran remains a friend of Pakistan in times of hardship and tries to continue bilateral cordial relations. Sharif thanked Iran for supporting his country in times of difficulty. The Taliban are warning against U.S. drones patrolling the skies over Afghanistan, urging Washington to stop the flights. Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mujahid is calling the flights an act of aggression and asking the U.S. to respect the rights of Afghan people. Just weeks ago, U.S. drones targeted a deserted residential home in Kabul without prior knowledge of the Taliban government. Now, afterward, U.S. President Biden claimed that the al-Qaeda ringleader had been killed in that strike. The Taliban said that the U.S. drone operations violate international conventions, Afghan airspace, and an agreement that paved the way for the U.S. troop pullout. It was a bombshell, still very hard to comprehend. Britain announcing a whopping 80% rise in electricity and gas bills. The immediate question is, how are the people going to afford it? Britain's already suffering a cost of living crisis, which only appears to worsen with no relief in the near future.
It has been a rocky economic road that the Brits are traveling on, which continues to chip away at their income. Some were questioning how they would manage their expenses in the UK these days. Why, with an unprecedented inflation and a cost of living crisis, now their nightmare has gotten worse. An 80% increase in electric and gas bills have been announced, one that is coming before the winter season.
It is a major problem because what is happening, of course, is first of all, real incomes are falling because people are not getting wage settlements in line with inflation, but below inflation. Then tax burden has increased, you know, to record levels as well. The government has been raising taxes to pay for the furlough scheme and all the money that they splurged.
To be exact, an 80% increase would mean that it would average about £3,600, or about $4,200 per year from October. And this is terrible news, especially for the poor and the ones at the bottom half of the social strata. The UK was suffering already from high energy prices, in particular heating bills, even before the Ukraine crisis began. So bad was the situation that fuel poverty, as it was called, was leading to deaths for people who could not afford to heat their homes. These are the stats that are truly shocking, that one would not expect from a European country. For example, this article in 2020 pointed out to how thousands of people in the UK died from the cold and that fuel poverty was to blame. On average, there were 32,000 more deaths between December and marched in the rest of the year. Many perished because of the refusal of a society with abundant wealth and resources to provide for its most vulnerable citizens. An average of 9,700 deaths each year were believed to be caused by living in a cold house.
We know we need to do more because actually the most vulnerable households have no cushion, have nothing available to them. So what I'm looking at is how I can target that help for those people, not just to January.
Well, the price increase in energy bills will likely push millions into not just fuel poverty, but poverty. The British government is now facing the unprecedented task of figuring out how to help people with their heating bills. And that in addition to a rise in the number of people applying for government assistance programs. In the meantime, many are joining a campaign calling for a stop to paying energy bills.
The unprecedented hike for energy prices in the UK will surely affect the UK's economy. One obvious outcome of this price increase is that it will chip away at people's spending power and income. This is while people's income has not kept pace with the inflation rate. Increases have been minimal or not at all. This may explain why there have been so many strikes and protests recently in different sectors in the UK. The latest, the postal worker strike. 115,000 workers across 1,500 locations. Criminal barristers and mass rail strikes have also plagued the UK, as the country is battling a historic cost of living crisis. The outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson has sure left an economic mess for the next administration to deal with. But was it all his fault? The UK did not have a sound economy even before the pandemic started. Among the group of G7 economies, the UK has suffered the highest inflation rate than any other G7 country, as price rises have reached a 40-year record, with inflation recorded at 10.1% in the year for the month of July. That is the highest since the year 1982. And with the Ukraine crisis showing no signs of ending, the future looks bleak for the country, especially since the new administration will not officially begin work until October. And Boris Johnson's view on this, the new administration will clearly have to help people with energy bills.
That I know that even if things can sometimes seem dark now.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, August 28, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listener Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, the Sunday program, and here I truly appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, Pramod Kambla from India, and Hector Friahofre, one of our old and regular listeners from Chile. Hector, Konstantin, and Pramod, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio and your favorite program, Listeners Special. And for your information, as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. So all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. Thank you for being with us. This is Listeners Special, and today is August 28, 2022, and it's a really beautiful Sunday in summer. And of course, we've received so many letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read these great emails. For this edition of Listeners Special, we've received an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina has sent us an email. Reginaldo Enunciaso from Brazil, one of our old and regular listeners from Brazil, has sent us an email. And from Sweden, we've received an email from Dan Olson, one of our old and regular listeners. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Let's see what Jayanta says. Dear IRIB English Radio staff, I am happy to report one of your programs listened via online live stream on IRIB's well-structured website with high-quality reception. Audio quality was loud and clear. Presentation was excellent with friendly-voiced hosts. In a spotlight, the interview on U.S. rapprochement to Saudi Arabia was interesting. The real intention of America to sell expensive armaments was clearly exposed. Also, lesson on Islamic lifestyle familiarized listeners to good manners, to be humble and kind, and follow Prophet Muhammad's teachings to be a role model. Islam also teaches us to get rid of arrogance and accept apology when one says sorry. And our program, The Key, beautifully explored the meaning and implication of the Holy Hajj. I would be grateful if my report is verified with a printed QSL card. I would also request for some postcards and postage stamps of Iran for my personal collection, if possible from your end. Wishing all at IRIB English Radio good health and happiness. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and please accept our appreciations to you for this detailed email, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. And thank you very much for letting us know your ideas about the quality of the reception report. As you said, the quality was loud and clear. It's great. And you also said that you enjoy the programs on Islamic lifestyle, and it was great the way you described the programs on Islamic lifestyle. You also like the program In Spotlight. Yes, that's a great program. It's good to know which program or programs our dear listeners like the most. Finally, this email was one of the perfect and one of the great messages we've ever received, because it was full of details about the quality of the reception and about the quality of the programs. Thank you very much, Jayanta Chakrabarty, for writing us this email. Write to us soon and tell us more and more about the quality of our programs. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. Here we've received an email from Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina. Alejandro says, I could listen to IRIB in English language radio a few days ago, kind of distorted sound, but hearable. There was a male voice talking about helping each other with medical problems. And I couldn't understand more, sadly. I attached two audio samples for clarification. The voice sounded a little bit distorted and I couldn't understand English language that much. Thank you very much, and I'm waiting for verification, my friends. First of all, salam and greetings to you, our dear listener from Argentina, Alejandro Filimonchak, and what a pity you had a distorted reception. We will fix the problem soon if it's on our behalf, of course. Fortunately, it was hearable, although. Generally, we're so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in Argentina in the Southern Hemisphere, and that's great. Please accept our EQSL card as a verification. Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina, wish you luck. We're also looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And from Brazil, we've received an email from Reginaldo Anunciaso, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Reginaldo says. Greetings from Brazil. How are you, dear friends? Well, I was listening to your radio a while ago. With news and talks by your male and female announcers, followed by a beautiful Iranian music. Iran is a beautiful country with a great culture and history. I know about its wonderful landscapes, Mount Damavand, and its different other monuments. Please, I would like to obtain information about your radio. That would be great if you can send me your program schedule. Thank you very much. Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and of course from IRIB English Radio staff, Reginaldo Anunciaso from Brazil, one of our great old and regular listeners. We are so happy to have you with us for a long time. We have you as a listener for many years. Thank you for your support and commitment, Reginaldo from Brazil. About your request about sending you a program's schedule, unfortunately, at the time of pandemic, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our great listeners is not possible. So for the time being, before this disease is eradicated all over the world, you can refer to our website, and there you can find our program's schedule at www.parstoday.com/en. And for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card as a verification. Reginaldo Anunciosa from Brazil, we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you. So let's have Dan Olson's email from Sweden here. Dan Olson is one of our old and regular listeners. He says, "Hi, radio friends. My name is Dan Olson, and I am a Swedish radio listener. I had the pleasure to hear IRIB. I am 58 years old, and I have listened to radio since 1975. Looking forward to receiving confirmation from your site. Best regards from Sweden." First of all, salam, and please accept our warm greetings and, of course, our appreciations to you, Dan Olson, for sending us this email. That's great. Every time you send us this email, you just describe your information, how long you've been listening to IRIB English Radio, and, of course, your opinion about our programs. Dan Olson from Sweden, thank you very much for this detailed message. Dan Olson from Sweden, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. Okay, dear listeners, art is long and time is short. We had a good time together and we have to say goodbye. But before that, I send my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails, including Pramod Kambla from India, Konstantin Barsenkov from Russia, Hector Friahofre from Chile, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina, Dan Olson from Sweden, Reginaldo Anuncioso from Brazil. Yes, that was all. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a good time. Please keep in touch with your favorite program, Listeners Special, and of course, IRIB English Radio, and have a good time.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RRE English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
United States has been accused of a huge covert pro-Western digital campaign targeting Middle East or West Asia. It was reported that dozens of social media accounts, which have been closed, as it's been reported at this point, operated for years in an attempt to influence people in the Middle East or West Asia and Asia. A new study believes the U.S. is behind it. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will ask why the U.S. deemed it so important to alter or to influence the opinions and thoughts of people in this region in particular, and what was their goal behind this. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, joins us. And also editor at Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett, who joins us from Madison.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, let me ask you a simple question here from you, Arya Barzari. When you come to understanding what this title means of what the U.S. has been accused, can you break it down for us? Because maybe it could be a bit confusing to some. The accusation, a huge covert pro-Western digital campaign targeting Middle East and in part Asia, which includes Russia and China.
Sure. Actually, it's nothing new when you look at it from a historical perspective. I mean, the U.S. has been always involved in covert plans and missions, either by, coups against various countries, committing coups, inciting coups, or via media, such as the Radio Free Europe during the Cold War, or even after that. What is new in this instance is the use or the abuse of social media. And what is even more interesting is that giant social media companies such as Twitter and Facebook decided to speak up and speak against the U.S. and UK government and played the role of whistleblowers. While for years we used to here scandals that were Twitter and Facebook managers were involved in it, such as Cambridge Analytica and also various scandalous programs that were accusing Twitter and Facebook companies of trying to manipulate information.
So why do you think they decided to speak up now? I mean, this thing was in operation for 5 years, and I can almost bet that it's still going on in one form or another, and even prior to 2012, because it cites the time period of 2012 to 5 years from that point on. So why speak now? Why would they target the U.S. in a sense now?
Well, at this point, we cannot say for sure. We can only speculate that they had enough of the government suppression, and they decided to fight back a little bit. And also, they were hugely harmed by the leaks and reports about how they abused people's trust on them and how they used the information that was supposed to be private and sold it to third parties. So I think they are trying to buy some legitimacy for themselves and try to recover some of the damage that was done previously to them and show to the outside world, show to the users that we are not that corrupt and we are reliable and trustworthy social media companies and we are independent, so to speak, from governments of U.S. and U.K. But this is only, I think, I suppose, is the tip of iceberg that these two companies decided to reveal. And sure, the rest of it will stay hidden for years.
Well, I mean, Kevin Barrett, when you take a look at what was done, which I'd like for you to really expand on it for us, from what we understand, there were memes, petitions, fake news, AI-altered profile photos, propaganda, hashtags, and all sorts of things that had to be superficially made up. And that's what the U.S. has been accused of. Tell us the expanding role that the U.S. has been accused of in this particular instance, which focused on influencing people in the Middle East or West Asia, and not to mention Russia and China also.
Well, yeah, the U.S. has worked through these social media companies and through the Internet, which was created in the U.S. by DARPA. Let's remember that DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, actually came up with the Internet, and it was originally designed as a way to avoid any kind of blockage or breakdown in the event of nuclear war. So it was a command and control and communication system, 3 C's, that was meant to survive nuclear war and be used by the American military intelligence community. That's what the Internet originally was. And so they founded it, they got the infrastructure and built the infrastructure to their advantage, and they've been in control of it disproportionately, at least, ever since. Now, it's a little bit like the MKUltra program and LSD. And you may recall that the CIA developed LSD and along with a long list of other drugs that it was using to try to brainwash people. And then the hippies got hold of it, and pretty soon they were sort of deprogramming people from the CIA mentality. So here, the Internet, of course, has become a tool that anybody can use to a certain extent. But the people who built that infrastructure are still in a position to use it more powerfully than others. And so I guess these revelations, which I haven't really had a chance to investigate carefully, would indicate that what's come out is stuff that we kind of already very much suspected, which is that the social media companies are very much part of the U.S. military intelligence community. Google is widely known to be essentially a branch of the CIA. Google Alphabet has been involved in some of the ugliest CIA criminal black ops, including biological weapons in Tbilisi, Georgia, smuggling the chemical weapons into Syria for use in false flags blamed falsely on Bashar al-Assad, and all sorts of things. Google is the CIA. Facebook is the CIA plus Israel. Mark Zuckerberg is a Zionist who consults with Bibi Netanyahu. And so what these people do is that they use these outfits, the social media, to spin reality in the direction that their leadership wants them to. And they've been doing this to the entire planet. They're doing it to the West, and they're doing it to the Middle East and the Islamic world.
Well, they have done it to West Asia or Middle East, as it's called, to the extent where 40% of their focus was the area of the Middle East or West Asia, and in particular, Iran was their focus. So, Mr. Mohammadi, why do you think the U.S. has such a keen interest in trying to influence and shape thoughts and stances towards Iran through social media? Why this intensity behind that?
Well, it's not a secret that the U.S. Governments, since at least Ronald Reagan, were trying to topple the Iranian system, the Iranian, and also they were working against the Iranian revolution. So what they are doing is exactly trying to brainwash people, which they are not and will not be successful in that. But they might be successful in creating small echo chambers where people who are pro-West and anti-government in Iran or China or Russia might become under the illusion that the majority of people think like them. And the social media is very capable of doing that. And it is addictive. You know, when thousands of fake accounts like your tweet or your Instagram post and give you this wrong impression that, you know, being against, working against your country is a good thing and it's a noble thing according to the Western standards, then you, people, which are very small percentage of the population, might be brainwashed into doing more vulgar things. And they are, I think that they are banking on that. They are, I'm sure, more wise than, you know, to think that they are capable of toppling the government or the system in Iran, Russia or China by thousands or even millions of fake accounts. The time that such techniques could work, for example, during the Arab uprising is long past, and people in Middle East, China and Russia are wiser than that, and they don't get fooled twice by the same tricksters.
Okay, we're going to get to some of the things that are fake and not when it comes to Iran, and Kevin Barrett, when it comes to Russia, it actually was cited as being one of the most active campaigns in which the Russian-speaking internet users in Central Asia were targeted, and they focused on criticizing Russia over the civilian deaths, according to the way they saw it, and other atrocities when it came to the Ukraine conflict. Isn't that a way for the U.S. and these fake accounts and what have you wanting to convince people who may doubt what is going on in the Ukraine conflict to accuse Russia rather than, in a sense, then overshadowing what Ukraine is actually doing, because Ukraine also is responsible for some of the deaths, and in the bigger picture, to convince that target that this military operation that Russia is conducting is not a good thing.
The Western mind control machine has actually done pretty well in this war on Russia through Ukraine, which is what it is. This is a Western war of aggression on Russia. But the global consciousness of that is pretty mixed because the Western oligarchs own a disproportionate share of the global media. So they are using all sorts of means, including the creation and maintenance of huge numbers of fake social media accounts, spam, bots, and so on, to try to make people think that essentially the whole world sides with them against Russia, which of course isn't true. The world largely has sided with Russia. The vast majority of the world has refused to go along with the sanctions. And this propaganda blaming Russia for atrocities in Ukraine is actually quite shameful, because the way the U.S. has fought its wars has been to make no effort whatsoever to spare civilian populations, but on the contrary, to deliberately target civilian populations. When the U.S. went into the former Yugoslavia, and then when it went into Iraq, and of course its actions elsewhere in Afghanistan and so on, always involve attacking civilian infrastructure, making life miserable for civilians. They killed perhaps 500,000 plus Iraqi children, as Madeleine Albright admitted during the 1990s, due to the destruction of Iraqi infrastructure, leading the children to be drinking polluted water and so on. So the Americans deliberately
Let me ask you this,
civilians.
Kevin Barrett, since you're mentioning Iraq, isn't that one of the things that the U.S. has realized its mistake in a sense? And that is why West Asia or the Middle East is focused, because many here in this region doubt very highly the intentions that the U.S. has overall when it comes to the way that it exercises its foreign policy, given the fact that they have firsthand accounts of what happened in Iraq.
Well, yeah, the U.S. is behind the eight ball in propagandizing West Asia. And so it is, of course, trying to claim that Russia is committing all these terrible human rights violations in Ukraine, when the reality of the situation is that if Russia had chosen to wage its war on Ukraine the way the U.S. waged its war on Iraq, you would have huge numbers of Ukrainian casualties. They would have leveled much of Kiev, which Russia could do any moment that it wants. But Russia is taking this very slow, methodical approach, minimizing its own casualties and minimizing Ukrainian civilian casualties. And in the areas they're fighting, most of the people identify as Russian and speak Russian and are on the side of the Russians. So it's obvious why they're doing that. But that's the truth. And unfortunately, the media, and including social media, as we're seeing, is dominated by these Anglo-Zionist oligarchs who basically lie about everything. You know, Putin may not always tell the truth, but he usually does. Sure. And when he said that the West is the empire of lies, that was the truth.
Well, I was going to ask you now, Mr. Mohammadi, as I alluded to before, some of the fake news that has been propagated by the U.S. as a whole, and of course through probably some of these accounts that for the period of 5 years targeted Iran. And I'd like to ask you about those and see what you think, such as the lie that the U.S. has spread about Iran being a leading state sponsor of terrorism. We could counter that in a sense, and I'd like to get your reaction of how the truth on that is that the war on terror was conducted against groups like Al-Qaeda, Daesh, or Al-Shabaab, none of which are backed by Iran. So that's one of the falsities that the U.S. has premised when it comes to spreading the lie of the Iran being a leading state sponsor of terrorism. Do you agree with that? And what other instances of fake news on Iran do you think is being spread online, even to this day perhaps, by the U.S. through online fake accounts?
I totally agree with you. And to add to that, if you look at the region, Iran was the only country for years to support Syria against terrorist groups such as ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra. And even in Iraq, Iran was there to defend Erbil even before the Kurdish region's usual allies in the West. So of course it is a propaganda, and of course Iran is a victim of terrorism. The latest one was the coward act by the U.S. of assassinating General Martyr Qasem Soleimani. So if we look at the record of the countries and not at the propaganda, it is clear which state is committing terror and which state is fighting terror. We were fighting ISIS in Iraq, in Syria, and we were fighting terrorism inside our country for years as well, and still are fighting terrorism. But propaganda machine is getting more and more sophisticated, especially with the advent of social media. And you know, if we use the term coined by French philosopher Baudrillard, the hyper real or hyper reality that is created inside this you know, virtual medias and virtual space, sometimes it doesn't refer to the outside reality at all, and it does not need to. So those signifiers don't refer to a signified in the real world. Uh-huh. They are signifiers that refer to the other signifiers, to use the philosophical terms. So it's all in their minds and in the minds of people who are manipulated by sure. these manipulating machines, which are social media, and they have very, very sophisticated algorithms that follow your likes and dislikes and the patterns of your behavior, I mean people's behavior, in order to brainwash them. How right. much they are successful in that, it needs to be analyzed.
Well, this particular study actually said that some of these, or a lot of it, overall, Kevin Barrett, they were not that successful. Actually, they did not really, they were not able to sway the audience to the intended goals that they had. So why do you think that is? Because that, in a sense, and my question to you is, doesn't that show that the audience out there, the viewers out there, are much smarter now, more informed, especially when it comes to the propaganda leveled against countries like Iran, perhaps, and even Russia and China?
I think that's true. Yes, I think that it's, especially the West Asia region has traditionally been a very difficult audience for Western propaganda. There's this term, the Arab street, that, of course, has been used by the Zionist oligarchs that own Western media and the people in the government, who are really annoyed that ordinary people in the Arab world and the rest of West Asia don't seem to go along with the Western narrative on all sorts of things.
Okay.
And it drives them crazy. And sure. I guess that's continuing now, as the social media manipulation is you know, it's probably cultural factors. It's probably harder for them to right. figure out what motivates an individual in West Asia than it is for them to figure out what motivates an individual in, say, the United States. They probably just don't have enough sort of psyops expertise.
Well, thank you for that. I'm sorry to jump in. We're fresh out of time. Let me thank our guests, Assistant Professor of Middle East Studies at the University of Tehran, Arya Barzan Mohammadi, and editor at Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett. Thank you both for your input. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Yikova Tafoye and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Dear listeners, the audience of your very favorite program, For a Better Life, you're listening to IRB English Radio. This is Asma, your friend, and we're going to have a heart-to-heart whisper regarding the literature of Ashura. Well, previously on For a Better Life, we talked about the themes of literary pieces regarding the Battle of Karbala. We said that through these pieces of